On this episode of Mothman of the Bible Belt, Davis Kimball, Will Oxley, and Ron Quickle of Morgantown-based rock funk jam band Intoxicated Zen dissect tracks from their 2024 eponymous debut record and dish on how the band came together. The Intoxicated Zen members chime in on WVU nixing their world languages department and eliminating several music programs. Bandleader Davis Kimball delves into his obsession with aliens that culminated in the wild instrumental track, Project Serpo. Plus, the band give their two cents on why the B-52s are not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame yet. Coming up next.
Welcome to the Mothman in the Bible Belt podcast with your host, Buck Fantastic.
Girl Scout cookies.
Intoxicated Zen define themselves as being a funk, jazz, hip-hop, soul, rock jam band. The eclectic band formed 5 years ago, with founder Davis Kimball being the primary songwriter. The current lineup has been together for nearly 2 years. The band recently released their first record in June. This is Intoxicated Zen's first ever podcast interview. Join me, your host, Buck Fantastic, for another exciting episode of Mothman of the Bible Belt. It's eclectic chit-chat of otherworldly origins. Welcome to the Mothman of the Bible Belt, Davis, Will, and Ryan. How are you all doing this evening?
Great, good. Very good. Thank you for asking. Good, yeah.
Y'all sound like Madness meets Wham meets Boz Scaggs.
I've actually never heard us described like that, but it's the more I think about it, that's pretty flattering. I'm a big fan of all that.
Your sax playing is really killer.
Oh, thank you. I mean, we can agree to disagree on that one, but, you know, I think I service what I need to make the band sound like we do, but I don't think I would sound anywhere as good if I didn't have the talented bandmates to play off of, you know? I mean, I think we all do pretty well on inspiring each other to take it to the next level.
Will's being humble, though. He consistently gets the most praise after a gig. Like, it's just, you know, everybody's always very complimentary for Will.
So, Intoxicated Zen, it's 5 years old. How did the band come into being, Davis?
Sure, and I got to apologize because I'm kind of in the middle of a thunderstorm that just sort of happened upon me. But I've been playing music with my buddies for, like, 10 years or so, and I was in a couple different projects with different names for a while. You know, Intoxicated Zen was sort of just the evolution of that, and then at some point we just decided we wanted to do funk, so we needed to have a new name. Intoxicated Zen ended up being the name we settled on, and we can talk about how we got the name if you want.
Were y'all high?
No, well, so I was in Key West, Florida, and I go every year. And I've got a buddy named Zenzele Scully. And he came with us that year. We went out drinking and he ended up, you know, going a little bit too hard. And we had to carry him home. When we got home, my buddy's dad was like, you know, took one look at him, passed out on the couch and was like, Intoxicated Zen. Huh, it's a good name for a band. And we ran with it.
Ryan, who is the primary songwriter in Intoxicated Zen?
So I think the primary songwriter, I mean, it has to be Davis because he's written, I mean, the vast majority of our songs and all the lyrics and things like that. But he sort of touched on this earlier. What I really love about this group in particular, and I've been involved in several other projects with, you know, different musicians, and it's always kind of hard to get something off the ground, like an idea that you have, or like to have an idea and turn it into a finished product. But like with this band, I mean, obviously there's times where we've struggled, but I found that we're the quickest at being able to take all of our collective ideas and piece them together into one cohesive thing. And I think that's why our sound is so unique, is because we all have these different influences and different backgrounds. And the fact that we're able to take all of those different parts and put them together into a song Definitely helps us have a unique sound, but also helps with that sort of jam bandy sound that we're kind of going for. So, yeah.
So, Davis, did you audition your friends for the band, or was this like a general, like, open audition for just anyone who wanted to be in Intoxicated Zen?
Yeah, it wasn't even really like auditioning. It was some buddies and I. There were like four original members to Intoxicated Zen, and for various reasons, through moves and other such things, the other original members have sort of floated away. And then just as we came upon like needs for replacements or needs to add different sound elements to the band, like Will, for example, the way he ended up in the band, we were playing a festival at the Friends of the Cheat. Is that right, Will? It was the Friends of the Cheat, right?
Yep.
Yeah. He was playing with his other band, Tom Batchelor Band. And we just were like, yeah, this guy's awesome. So we started chatting with him after and asked him if he wanted to jam with us. Now he's a part of the band. And Ryan, we just wanted keys. And we were playing with Jonah, who's unfortunately not here, but he knew Ryan from school. So he brought us Ryan, gifted us Ryan. So, I mean, I don't know if it would be fair to say that it was an auditioning process. It was more so just, you know, seeing who you vibe with and stuff falling in the band's lap.
Will, what can you say about Intoxicated Zen's self-titled debut record?
What could I not say about it? I guess would be the shorter answer. But it's been just a fantastic project to be a part of. Touching on what both Davis and Ryan have alluded to with the writing process just being so easy and organic. Everyone, like, even in as far as like the day of in the recording studio, just new ideas popping up and just seamlessly putting them in there. And it sounds like it was something that was just meticulously written out, you know, over candlelight by, you know, some studious music theory master. But in reality, it was just a bunch of friends getting together and almost like group building a Lego set, you know, just kind of going with the flow and seeing what's created out of it. And we had the real great opportunity of working with Hollis Greathouse out of Red Cayman Studios up in Pittsburgh, who is just an absolute like shaman of musicians and mastering sound. And through his guidance too, having a lot of effect on our final sound of his ideas or suggestions or kind of, you know, warnings of maybe you don't want to do this. Maybe you want to turn this down just a little bit more or things like that. And the final product being just kind of like an album that has a little bit of something for everybody. You have your slow moments, your nostalgic moments. You have your almost heavy metal moments with some of our tunes like Oh No or Project Serpo. What I'm going to call our token reggae tune right now is in there. Rock, funk, jazz fusion, all the things that he listed and more. It's just been a really satisfying project to be a part of, and especially seeing it all come to fruition and having my 9-month old daughter be in the front cover, you know, just kind of tied that all in a nice little bow. And seeing where it goes from here, that's actually the most exciting part about it. You know, it's like we finally hit the ground running, and now we just got to see where that takes us.
Davis, your first album track, Palindrome, the refrain is, "I want nothing to do with you." Who inspired it? Did someone piss you off? Or?
Fuck, a lot of people pissed me off. I got to tell you, I've got a bit of a temper, and that's why Ryan's laughing right now. I didn't write those lyrics though, and actually on the track, the person who wrote those lyrics is credited for having done so. There's a friend, Kyle Lewis. I was playing in a band with him, and we were just kind of jamming around, started writing that track, and he just sort of like, those were like filler lyrics, I think. You know, we had the chord progression, and he was just, nothing to do with you. I wasn't even sure that's what he was saying, but I dug it. I related to it, so I went with it.
I love Losing Grip. In it, you sing, "Every good thing I have to leave."
Every good thing I had to leave. My mind break, but I can't help it in the end. I'm in love, and I don't think I can shake it all back. I'm in love, and I don't.
Did this relationship end well, Davis?
That's what well, about. Actually, yeah, good question. But I mean, I hate to disappoint. The relationship wasn't with a person. It was with a place. And I wrote the song as sort of an homage to like the fact of life that everything sort of has its expiration date. And you can either choose to wallow in that or see the beauty in having things that you love so much, it hurts to lose them. Because I think if you don't have that in your life, you know, you don't, that's kind of a sad life. But I was living in Norway for 6 months. I wrote that towards the end of my stay there because I had met a lot of, you know, great friends. So I was sad to leave. So that was about my time there more than anything. And I would say the relationship ended well.
I love the playing and melodies on After Dark. How did that song come about? It sounds a little bit like the melody in the chorus. It sounds a little bit like New Edition's Mr. Telephone.
It's after dark, gonna go to the park, gonna have a little drink, take a little time to think. There's nothing we can do about it now.
Yeah, well,
Go ahead, David.
Oh, you take this one.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, that one is one we kind of like our bass player, Caleb, to field because that song actually was his brainchild. Of course, we all added our own touches to it, but that was one of the few songs that we have that was brought to us by Caleb as almost its own fully formed product. He actually had an amazing demo that he did himself that he brought to the band. And then we just kind of reworked it to fit our instrumentation, tweaked it here and there. But that was all him. I guess I don't want to put words in his mouth, but from my take on it is he writes a lot about nostalgia and introspective tendencies, you know. And I guess as far as with your question with the melodies and all that, I'm not sure if I could attest to it. Where he got the idea or if he was influenced by the music that you referenced. But we actually, it's one of the band's favorite ones almost unanimously to play just because we can always keep it tight. It's got a nice flow to it, a really great message, good vocal harmonies that we all get to kind of have fun with. And if you're talking about specifically maybe the chorus where it kind of does that little step up motion there.
Your second instrumental piece is named Project Serpo. Is the piece, the name, that is that inspired by the alleged interstellar trip the U.S. had to planet Serpo and the Zeta Reticula galaxy?
All right, I'm going to jump in on this one, okay? Because I know Davis is ready to answer this, okay?
It was a coin flip.
I have to jump in here. So his thing is aliens, all right? That's mm-hmm. I'm just going to say that. That's his thing, okay? And we were in the studio with Hollis, as we've mentioned before, the producer that we've worked with. And I just remember any time there was downtime, you know, in the studio and we'd just be, you know, talking about whatever. Somehow the conversation led to aliens in one way or another. We're talking about Roswell and there was a bunch of recent stuff that had happened that Davis can tell you more about. But anyway, we decided to call it that, which was just the perfect name for it. Just because of how much we were talking about all those different things and just having fun, you know, in the studio. So, and the whole thing is kind of like a journey. If you listen to the beginning of the song to the end, it's all over the place in terms of style, in terms of feel, in terms of, you know, harmonies and melodies. So it's the perfect title because it literally feels like a trip when you listen to it from beginning to end.
If I remember correctly, I believe Davis told me during the sax solo part where it gets very chaotic near the middle to think of, I think it was Alias Moses parting the interstellar seas.
Correct. That's correct. Yes.
And we even have spacesuits now.
We do. Yeah,
we do have spacesuits now. Yes.
Buck, I'm so glad you asked. And you're spot on. That's exactly the thought behind that.
I just learned about Planet Serpo, the supposed Planet Serpo, a few weeks ago. I saw this video on YouTube, and I'm like, I'm not saying I believe it, but with our government, you never know.
You never know.
you know, I put it in there sort of a tongue in cheek. Like, I'm not trying to suggest through the name of that song that that particular story is true, but I do have, you know, my fascination with extraterrestrial aliens and just the UAP phenomenon. I wrote that song with our old drummer and Will. We were in just sort of in a room together, trying to make different pieces fit together. And I was doing guitar lessons at the time, trying to just like play around with Phrygian dominant mode for whatever reason. And I think it was Will who had the idea to try to make it sound kind of Egyptian at some point. So yeah, we're just sort of splicing and stitching different pieces together to try to create something interesting and instrumental, and realized through the process that it sounded kind of like a journey. Starts off upbeat and leave, you know, as if you're young and leaving the nest for the first time. And then you start to like experience some turmoil, and then things get really crazy. And the part that Will's talking about is right after the sort of staccato heavy section where Ryan begins his key solo. Was like, in my mind, if there were like an animated music video, if anybody's listening that does animation, I would absolutely love if we could work something out to where, you know, there's some sort of alien component, but then there's like the story of Moses leading the Israelites through the Red Sea, and like the Egyptians follow them through the tunnel that he's created when he parted the sea. And then once they make it to the other end, you know, he closes back up the ocean and all of the Egyptians are sort of washed away. And, you know, and I sort of have an image of that, in that section of the song. But anyway, sort of,
I think it's funny because, like, you know, that's like how we're imagining this. I'd be very curious to know, like, what are other people thinking when they hear this? Because I can almost guarantee it's not that.
True.
But something, you know, who knows?
I don't know. Maybe Buck seems to have thought of it, so you never know.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's cool about it. It's open to interpretation.
Davis, with your song Dependency, you sing, "Cause I'm feeling good.
Cause I'm feeling good. Up, up and away, and I'm flying high. Don't wanna quit, don't think I should. So many times I found myself on the wrong side of the road. But I'm holding out for any hope that I can find my way back from the cold."
But is this about alcoholism?
It's about just living hedonistically, generally speaking. It's, you know, that sort of ebb and flow and cycle of falling back into the same patterns and realizing that they aren't fulfilling, but then getting bored again and embracing the sort of more like temporal hedonistic aspects of life. Alcoholism is certainly a part of that.
We actually almost called it Low Hedonistic Night as the title of the song.
What a title.
That's true.
I don't mind slowing down from time to time when I'm alone. Nothing else to do. Watching life pass by makes me nervous, and sometimes it's all I do. It's all I do. I don't know where I go from here. No destination of mine, but time moves slow. It's on me to choose direction to follow where the wind blows.
On the Road is really funky. What's the story behind it?
What is the story? I was sitting out in the yard. It was sunny, sort of like right when spring was. When did we write that song, guys?
I think, yeah, it was between spring and summer. I thought it was, you know, when you were making all those commutes to State College.
Yeah, I think it was like, yeah. It had been cold, and I can't stand the cold. So had a nice sunny day for once. And I stay out at my best friend's house when I'm in Morgantown. And he's got this nice big yard. So I just kind of took my guitar and sat out in the yard and started playing around. And I'm on the road a lot. So, and not just what Will was talking about, but like I worked for the State Department for a semester, and I was driving back and forth between DC, living in, I'm on the road right now. You know, like,
I was always on the road.
Yeah, I pulled off at a gas station to do this. So, yeah, I'm literally constantly moving. And that song is sort of about that.
What's your favorite track on the album, Will?
Oh, man. That's actually a really hard one to answer, because a lot of them are favorites for different reasons, or favorites, you know, because of different things. I guess the track that I brought to the band, Mr. Landlord, is one of my favorites just because of it was really my first attempt at bringing all of my reggae band experience into a tune of my own. I've been in another reggae band, as they mentioned, Tom Bachelor Band, for almost 13 years at the end of this year. And, you know, having played shit tons of reggae and ska and, you know, tunes like that, I had never really kind of flexed my own muscle when it came to writing tunes like that. Not only that, but if you've listened to the tune and have lived anywhere near Morgantown or have had really bad experiences with landlords, you know, it's kind of a rampant thing around here. So it was
Sam and Charles,
not necessarily a political tune, but it was kind of a tune of venting about these kind of issues like that. But other than that, I think Diablo will be and forever always be my just favorite tune. It's the first one I ever learned playing with the band when I first joined, and I think it'll be very hard to beat that as the number one spot. It's just high energy, it's fun, it's got a really easy hook to sing along to with the chorus, you know. And like with Project Serpo, it's got a lot of different sections, especially when we play it live, that last section after the chorus and all that, we can really make that whatever we want. It's like a blank canvas. We can switch styles, build it, reduce it, you know, just kind of play with it and have fun. And that really translates well on stage. And I think the crowd really enjoys it too, because even though it's the same song and sometimes you get sick of hearing the same band play the same song live over and over and over, it's one that we can refreshing every time we play it. And I think those aspects all together kind of just hold it number one in my heart.
With Mr. Landlord, is it you singing, Will?
Yeah, I sing lead, and then the rest of the band did a lot of backups for it.
No, it's like you sing down your savings with your profits so steep while your wolves in disguise. Is that smile, devour the weak?
Smile and devour the weak, yeah. Kind of alluding to, you know, while landlords are counting your rent money, their dilapidated homes are just collapsing on you or causing.
So who's the slumlord in question?
Which is kind of really funny because literally this
who's the slumlord? Who's the slumlord?
Yeah, slumlord. Yeah.
Can you say?
This week, as almost a prime example of this, I had to call the fire department because the landlord had let our water boilers, you know, go out of date, out of repair, and had caused the CO2 alarm to go off, the fire alarm to go off. We had to vacate our apartment for a few hours, like late at night. It was a whole big thing, you know, and it's just an experience that having gone from, you know, rentable property to rentable property in Morgantown over the past 15 years, it's just, it's an issue that keeps coming up for some reason, you know?
I'm in the process of buying myself. I've had one slumlord after the next since I've been on my own. So I've just said, fuck it. I mean, yeah, I'm done. I'm done. I'd rather buy a place and have the damn place fall in than have one more damn slumlord.
Yep, and that's buying is our next step too. We're just kind of waiting for that perfect white little picket fence house to come along and speak to us, and we're just going to grab it up. Either that or build, but you know, we'll see.
What's your favorite track on the record, Ryan?
That's a tough one. I mean, there are definitely ones that there are some that I enjoy playing live more, and there are some, but like those aren't necessarily the ones that I like to listen to the most. I feel like my favorite track, like if I'm just like listening to the album, is probably Losing Grip, because I think that's our most like polished sort of song. Like it's a song, you know, it's like not super jam bandy, you know, it's like you can just really catchy hook and, you know, it's almost like poppy in that lane. But like when it comes to like playing something live, I really like Project Serpo just because it's so jam bandy and we can just give it so much energy and like, and there are sections. That's probably the one that we keep pretty structured because that one already has a weird structure. So then if we start extending sections, it's going to get like really hard to follow. But like, I mean, Will was saying Diablo. I mean, we could like play Diablo for like forever. Like we could just start open with Diablo and play that for like an hour. Cause like we just extend the section and like, you know, all have our own little thing to it. And we're able to communicate musically very well. So, you know, if someone's taking a solo and they want to keep going, you know, like it's just kind of like, you just know, like, okay, I'm going to lay out, I'm going to keep, you know, comping while they take the solo, or okay, I can see that they're done, I'm going to take over now. Like all these things, like we're able to just really like click with each other really well. And I think that's probably our strongest asset as a band.
So who's your favorite song, Children, on here, Davis?
Project Zerpo, obviously. No, but I mean, kind of in the same boat as Ryan. My two answers are Losing Grip and Project Zerpo. Losing Grip because of what it means to me and like, how, you know, the process of writing it and when I wrote it. Project Zerpo because it was fun. It was fun to write. It was fun to imagine as I was writing it, you know, like to play these games and like kind of be a kid again and have this whole imagery storyline that goes along with the music just in my head. To practice with different chord progressions and things that I wouldn't do in normally. And then it's just really fun to play live. So I think probably overall that would be my answer. But in terms of like just sentimental value, it would be Losing Grip. But with that said, what's your favorite song in the album, Buck?
Favorite song? I like Dependency.
Okay.
It's deep. It's deep. And then you all jam at the very end. But I like it. I like it. I mean, I can relate to all of all the drunks in my families. It's like, you know, I get it. I get it. And it means something.
I do love the and you kind of touched on that, like it gets very jammy at the end. Like I think that's one of our songs that is the most like starts out pretty normal songy, but kind of poppy, like almost like Losing Grip in that lane, but then it gets really jammy by the end of it. So yeah, that's probably our best like hybrid of the two.
Well, who does the art for your single covers? It's really great.
Well, actually, I think I've done one or two, but really that is, we have a friend, a mutual friend, but I think mostly has worked with Davis, Shay, who has done most of the single covers and, I mean, does just a fantastic work, especially with kind of capturing the essence of each song and, you know, a still picture for each thumbnail for the singles. As to where her inspiration comes from, I'm not sure. Davis, do you normally send her like the song?
Oh gosh, yeah. You guys should see some of the conversations. I send these like massive storybook. Like normally, I start off by saying use your discretion. We've developed a relationship now to where Shay knows to use discretion, but at the same time, I'll be like, but if you want some inspiration, here's what I'm thinking, and I'll go like list all this stuff that Shay can pull from. But it's like a combination because I don't have the ability to, I'm not artistic in that way. And Shay always comes up with something awesome, like the Mustache Man, you know, pretty consistent in the album work these days. Shay was supposed to do the album artwork, and I really love the album artwork that we have. I love the way it turned out, and that was Will. But Shay had some stuff come up, wasn't able to do it, unfortunately. But yeah, tremendous artist. And a lot of it is, you know, sort of discretionary on Shay's side.
Ryan, what is your favorite venue to play at?
My favorite venue to play at? Well, I feel like, I mean, in Morgantown, there's really only one answer, and that's 123 Pleasant Street.
What Mark Benacosta said last night.
I mean, hey, it's, you know, it's the spot, and it's really the only spot in Morgantown, but no, I mean, whenever we're there, and it's like a show that we've organized, especially the one that we've put together in advance, you know, vast majority of the time, you know, we can sell the place out, get everybody moving, having a good time. The energy there is just great. Especially like, I think back to like our New Year's Eve show that we played. That was just such a fun show. That was one of the most fun shows I've played in a long time, just because of how many people were there and the energy, the crowd was just so energetic and, contagious. It was amazing.
Davis, how do you prepare for a show? Like, do you all like do a chant, a prayer, get drunk, smoke some weed? Like,
interesting.
What's the ritual?
All of the above.
Yeah, it's been a evolution, really. Used to be that we would all play plastered. There was a time. Case. That's less the case now. Actually, we're a good bit more well behaved. I don't know if the guys even know this, but I pray a lot. Actually, I incorporate prayer into my daily life, and I pray before every show. I go to the restroom because I have to go to the restroom. I think pretty much everybody does that before a show. But then while I'm in the bathroom, I say a prayer. That's my personal ritual. But the guys, they all do their own thing. You know, everybody gets in the headspace their own way. And like I said, it's sort of, there was a time there was a lot of alcohol involved. Nowadays, Will's sober, and Ryan's never been much of a drinker. A couple beers, you know, we're a couple beers kind of guys now. My gut can't take much more than that.
What music were you all listening to as children that influenced the sound of Intoxicated? Will?
Okay, well, I'll go first. Probably one of the biggest influences in my life is kind of twofold, and both out of the 90s, showing my age a little bit. The first would be 90s ska, third wave ska. I grew up with it. I was molded by it, raised by it, but
no doubt.
And you know, Less Than Jake, Real Big Fish, Mighty Mighty Boss Tones, Goldfinger, Streetlight Manifesto, and I could go on, but I won't subject you or the listeners to that. The second other biggest influence, I guess, was kind of out of the jazz sector, from a band called the Seatbelts, who was run by Yoko Kanno. Probably most noted for having written the music for Cowboy Bebop, which was a very popular anime back in like 1996. And the sax player, the first time I ever listened to that, just kind of blew me away. And I was just like, I want to do that. That's what I want to do. And, you know, the rest was kind of history. I've just been always kind of chasing that dragon, trying to capture that sound and that energy and that just kind of raw fury on the saxophone. But other than that, you know, I grew up in jazz bands and a lot of musicians in my family, opera and orchestras as well. So it's just, it's really a mixed bag. But I would say the ska and the Japanese jazz is really what kind of got me going.
What about you, Ryan?
So this is kind of I feel like this is not an answer that people would give when they talk about like musical influences, especially like, because I listened to them a lot in high school, is the Meters. Mm-hmm. I listened to the Meters all the time in high school. And me and my buddies at the time, we were in a band actually called the Chai Brothers. Anyway, long story short, we played like funk, very similar to this band. They're very similar style sound. I would just listen to their records, and like they were, like we were a three piece and we were sort of trying to emulate what they were doing on some of their records. Yeah, I don't know. I just fell in love with that, you know, that funk, the sound of all those old funk records, like James Brown, Kool and the Gang, the Meters. And then as I got older, you know, like I started listening to like more like modern funk bands like Lettuce, the Motet, all those bands that are sort of like, sort of adjacent to our style.
Davis, how do you respond to people who come to your shows who don't look like they're there to have a good time?
Oh, good. I mean, I don't know.
Does it get you down?
I would prefer that people be into it, of course. Like, I want people to come up, but I'm not, like, very pushy. And to each their own, you know, if that's your gig. I imagine if you're there and you paid to get in, you want to be there and you're having a good time in your own way. So who am I to judge? But yeah, of course, if I'm on stage and I'm looking out into the audience and people are sort of stationary, like statues, that's not ideal, of course.
I saw that at a B-52s and a Blondie concert at the Clay Center in 2010. And you had maybe 10% of the crowd that were really into both bands, and everyone else was just silent, mute. It was like you were in Japan. God damn it, people were so prudish. They never came back. We never had Blondie. We never had the B-52s back. And it
How
really
do you
pissed
do that
me
for
off.
The Love Shack, you know?
Yeah.
I know.
It's the Love Shack, baby.
I think that maybe that's the problem. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe that's all people know here. Davis, how would you compare the Morgantown music scene to Charleston and Huntington's?
We haven't played as much in Charleston as we'd like to. I know that there's a robust scene down there, but we've only been down a couple times and we've done some recording and stuff. I think Charleston arguably has at least is on par with Morgantown scene, if not, you know, slightly more robust. But I think Morgantown has this unique, you know, I've lived in different places, and traveled a good bit, and like 1-2-3 style venues are not particularly common. So we really benefit from having something like that in Morgantown. I think that helps the scene and drives the scene. If you didn't have that, I think Morgantown's music scene, there's a hunger for it, which is nice. You know, people want to have house parties. Other venues are trying to get in or, you know, work their way into the live music scene. But if we didn't have 1-2-3, I think the scene would really suffer in terms of like what local bands were able to do. Whereas I think Charleston probably does more to sort of support local artists, like on a wider scale.
Intoxicated Zen is a party band, and so is the B-52s. Why the hell aren't the B-52s in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame yet?
Man, I don't know, man. That's a great question. If anybody should be, it's them, okay? Rock Lobster? Come on.
No more words needed said.
There's none.
Buck stops at Rock Lobster.
That's it. Rock's in the name.
But yeah, the Hall of Rock Lobster is what it should be called.
You all are WVU alum. What are your thoughts over WVU president E. Gordon Gee cutting foreign language and music programs at WVU?
Okay, I'll take this one. I think Ryan's still a student, so I don't know how outspoken you are on this.
Well, I'll be very outspoken. I don't know. I'll be very outspoken.
Okay. All right, well, there we go. Yeah, my girlfriend was a part of the World Languages program at WVU. She's Italian, and she taught Italian and received a master's from WVU. So I'm pretty familiar with the issue. I think it's overly simplistic to say that I, Davis Kimball, standing on the outside, have all of the necessary financial information to know exactly what went into making that decision. But when it comes to providing a liberal arts education, I think that's a pretty essential element of it. And I think that it was short-sighted, to say the least, of the university. If it all comes back to a deficit, you know, if the university was operating on a deficit, I think that just shows mismanagement. I think something needs to change in terms of officers and directors of the university. But Ryan, what do you think?
Well, I just know, and like, I, you know, like similar to what you said, like, obviously, like, we don't know all the facts. We don't know the full extent of things, but it doesn't take a genius to know that when you're $40 million, I think that was the number, $40 million in a deficit, like somebody's, that is an egregious mishandling of university funds. I mean, the amount of money, it is the flagship university in our state, the amount of money that they receive every year, and then they just spend on, you know, like their football programs and their sports. And like, it's clear that there is a priority in where funds go. And it's because that's where the money is. That's where the money's in the sports. The money's in getting people to buy tickets to go to the stadium and, you know, the football team, because that's the biggest thing about WVU, their basketball team. That's everything.
But that's clearly not money is, because if that's where the money was, then there wouldn't be a $40 million deficit. That might be where they think the money is, but clearly where they think the money isn't necessarily right.
Oh, yeah. I see what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah.
But they're
investing in things thinking that that's, yeah, anyway, the point is,
right,
there's clearly a lack of appreciation for the liberal arts. And when you have a major flagship university, the state, West Virginia University, doesn't have any world languages offered. I mean, that's just sad. Like, that's just pathetic. Like, how can you not have any offering of that whatsoever? And to cut all these music programs, to cut the jazz studies program, to cut the composition program, and then try to cover it up with the whole merger with the Reed College of Media, because really they're just trying to save like the whole thing is just infuriating. I was lucky enough that my program did not get cut. But like, I know, like, for people that are young and, you know, in like 10 years or so, who's to say when they're ready to go to college, like, I would not recommend they go to West Virginia University as it is right now, just because I don't see a future in those programs. And it's a shame, because like, music is so important. it's so important. And I know everyone like says that, like, as like, it's like a cliche thing. It's like, music's so important, but like it is. And especially when there are certain instances of it being used at WVU events. Like, for example, at the end of this past year, there was an alumni banquet thing. And me and a couple of my friends, we sat there and we performed, and they wanted us to play some jazz songs while the like a bunch of the WVU officials and President Gordon Gee, they all came and they had this, you know, very fancy, lavish event. And then we played music for them. And they were like, you know, music, thank you, you know, courtesy of WVU Jazz. Okay. But it's like, it's just such a slap in the face. Like, you still expect us to come here and play this music for you, and you relish in the music and you enjoy the music, and you'll come up and say, oh, you guys did such a great job. We love you. You know, it was, thank you so much for having this. But then you can't even take, couldn't care less about actually investing in having that entertainment so that you can keep having the music that everyone enjoys, if that makes any sense. It's just, it's disrespectful. It's inconsiderate. And I don't see how you expect the future of music and entertainment to prosper in the state of West Virginia when you completely neglect all of those factors.
Will, you look like you want to chime in.
Oh, I mean, I was just listening. They were both, Davis and Ryan, I think, put it pretty eloquently. I'm not sure if I even have the right to add anything, because I was a theater major and our shit was always getting cut. So, I mean, I just have to agree is that it seems like they just want to put money into other things that seemingly will make them more money, and instead of well, quite frankly, the subject matter that is more important. I lived with a Russian national who was here on a work visa working for WVU in the foreign language department, and he lost his job to these cutbacks, you know. And I think for a lot of people, especially on a kind of global level coming here from other nations, their livelihood was dependent on working these programs, and to just kind of have them so unceremoniously just slashed and laid off, it kind of just puts a bitter taste in your mouth being an alumni.
I really do think that WVU has always had a reputation of kind of misspending and misappropriation of funds when it comes to, you know, actually making it a good place of education.
Who wants to do five questions?
I think any of us would do it.
Who
really wants to do it? Does anybody feel really passionately that they want to do this lightning round?
I'll do it. I don't care.
Okay, Ryan. No Doubt or Madness?
No Doubt.
The Macarena or the Hokey Pokey?
Be careful here, Ryan.
We're done. Hokey Pokey.
Flintstone Vitamins or Adderall?
Flintstone Vitamins.
What are these questions?
That's
the most funkiest band, Parliament, Funkadelic, or Rufus?
It's gotta be Funkadelic.
Britney Spears in concert or a Britney Spears drag performer? Neither one of them sing live.
You know what? We'll go with the drag performer.
Do you all have any band dates that you all like to plug?
September 18th will be at Club Cafe in Pittsburgh. September 20th, it's Moon Dogs. October 5th, there's a fundraiser. We're performing like a small little outdoor festival. This woman who owns a produce stand in Saverton recently had a family member pass away. So it's a fundraiser for that. It's a good cause. And then Bridge Day, October 19th. We're super stoked about that at the Outpost down in Fayetteville.
That'll be a fun one.
Intoxicated Zen's self-titled release can be purchased on Amazon Music and iTunes and be streamed on Spotify and YouTube. I want to thank Davis Kimball, Will Oxley, and Ryan Quickle for helping yours truly introduce their Morgantown-based jam band to the world. Best of luck with your funky musical endeavors. For Mothman and the Bible Belt podcast outlet updates, guest bios, episode breakdowns, and links to social media, please check us out on the web at www.mothmanandthebiblebelt.com. Thanks for listening.